This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On the Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
One of the many reasons David Bowie has been mourned and celebrated so intensely in the weeks since his death was his credibility as an older pop star. The man could have kicked back in about 1980 and kept coming out to big stadiums full of people to play the old hits. But in his 40s and 50s, even in his 60s, Bowie kept pushing, changing things up and finding new ways to present his music. At the very end of his life, he co-wrote Lazarus, a musical theater work that just ran in New York, and he enlisted a brand new band to shape his final record, Black Star. Those musicians were four jazz guys who'd been living their musical lives almost entirely outside of the limelight, the Donny McCaslin group. Sarah Larson went to talk with McCaslin and the band. And when she arrived, they were setting up at a little hole-in-the-wall joint where Bowie came to first hear them in 2014.
Thanks for doing this.
So we're in the 55 bar right now, which is a little space with Christmas lights and pictures of jazz musicians on the walls. And you guys have been playing here a lot. Can you talk about your relationship with this place?
Yeah, I think we've all played here for many years. And for me, it started, I moved to New York about 25 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so I've had this longstanding monthly gig here. So it's a really great place for us to just come and try things.
Yeah. So one night you were playing and David Bowie walked in.
Yeah. I mean, that's true. And what happened was at that time he was writing with an incredible composer and arranger, Maria Schneider. Mm-hmm. They were writing Sue together. Working with him, I guess she played him a track off one of our records called Casting for Gravity.
Yeah.
And then she suggested to him that he record with us. So it was during that period, the summer of 2014, where Maria brought David down here to hear us play.
Do you remember what you were playing?
Well, we were playing a lot of the music that is on Fast yeah. Future. So we would have played No Eyes
right.
by a guy whose stage name is Baths.
Stage name is what?
Baths. Bath, like the pool of Bath.
Like taking a bath. Okay. It's a good name. Do you remember what that was like?
Well, I think these guys will know. I don't think I told them that he was coming because it made me a little nervous and I tried not to think about it,
right.
frankly, and I tried not to look,
yep.
frankly. I tried to stay in the music, but I did look up and they were sitting like right in front, and I think he was very,
So like just, 5 feet away then.
Yeah, he blended right in and I think he had a knit cap on and I glanced over once or something and then just tried to focus on the music.
Thank you. Do you guys remember when he came in?
I remember I saw Maria, and then, oh, so the guy next to Maria is David Bowie. It was pretty, I mean, he really, even, you know, in the recording sessions too, he did have this ability to blend in and be so normal.
Yeah.
I don't know if anybody knew he was here. You know, we had a similar experience. He came to hear us at the Jazz Standard after the sessions for Black Star. It wasn't until after he left there was these rumors. Wait, David Bowie was here? I didn't even know him. Even the waitress who served him, you know. Pretty cool.
The waitress was like, there's this guy at table 31 that looks like an old David Bowie.
That was his disguise. We have to talk now. That was really incredible. I just feel like I was on some crazy journey that you were all on. Did you talk to him after that night that he came here? Did you talk to him at all, or did he just kind of come
no,
in
they,
and go out?
They left. We didn't talk to him.
Yeah.
But it was shortly thereafter, like it could have been later that night or the next night, that I got an email from him. And he sent me an MP3 of a demo track that he had made and asked if I wanted to record with him.
And you hit reply.
Yeah, I think I sat there in the stunned silence for a while. No, it was so exciting, you know, yeah. And the track that he sent was "Tis a Pity She's a Whore." And the version he sent ended up being the B-side to Sue.
Oh, right, yeah.
And then we re-recorded that song in the studio as part of Black Star. But the original version, David made at home. And it's him playing saxophone and him playing all the instruments. And that's the first thing he sent me.
And she touched me like a dew. Oh,
I interviewed Henry Hay last month. I talked to him about Lazarus, and he described a similar process where David would send him a demo, and then they would get together, and then more spontaneity and stuff would happen there. But I like the idea of being able to have both the sort of individual intense focus and the collaborative vibe, you know?
Yeah, that's a similar dynamic. By the time we got to the first recording session in January, I had maybe 7 songs, demos that he'd sent. Mm-hmm. In my case, you know, I was thinking a lot about how I could orchestrate the horns mm-hmm. with the different woodwind instruments I play. And then we got together, and then we went out there and we started practicing, and he was singing. And, you know, immediately Jason started playing something, and he said, oh, you know, I like that. And so it was also very creative in the moment, in terms of an intro to a song, like the intro to Lazarus, for example, was something that happened in the studio where Tim was playing something, or, you know, it just sort mm-hmm. of spontaneously happened.
Think he was looking for by bringing you in to work with him?
I know that Tony and David had talked about making a jazz recording of some sort, mm-hmm. right? Jazz is a pretty umbrella term, especially right now.
Yeah, Tony Visconti.
Yeah, and what we're doing is, you know, exploring this territory of electronica music. You know, we're not playing mm-hmm. straight ahead jazz.
Right, yeah.
Although we come from that. And I think the energy that we play with, I think, was appealing to him. But maybe a better way I could describe that, Sarah, is I remember the first day in the studio, and even I think even prior to that in an email correspondence, he said something like, Donnie, I don't know what's going to happen with this. Mm-hmm. I don't know where this is going to go, but let's have fun.
But I think you'd mentioned before that you'd heard some jazz influences on some of his earlier music, right?
Yeah. Tony talked about that in an interview that we did together and was saying that in a lot of David's earlier music, Tony felt that harmonic jazz influence was a little more hidden. Mm-hmm. But then on this, it's out there in the open more. And I remember there's a particular song that we recorded that didn't make the record. And it had a lot of these chords that had minor ninth intervals mm-hmm. in them, or half steps next to each other, or, you know, the tritone in there. So really, in the jazz lingo, we'd say crunchy chords. Uh-huh. You know, crunch chords that have a lot of grit and tension in them. Uh-huh. And this song was just laden with it. You know, I remember as I was trying to transcribe it, I was just like over and like, what is that voicing? You know, and over trying to find it and stuff. And for me, that was a really clear example.
I'm now realizing it's such a coherent sounding album. You would hear it and you'd assume these people had been playing together forever, you know?
Yeah. What that is to me is our relationship together, and the way we play together and the different combinations we've played in for years. And then again, as improvisers, mm-hmm. us mm-hmm. looking for that magic in the moment and how we play off each other. And then he steps in and the frame are these wonderful songs mm-hmm. that he's written. Mm-hmm. But he's also interacting with us while we're tracking.
Right.
And I think all of us have remarked as we've listened to it, like, wow, that's what we played in the studio. All the stuff you hear there, you know, it's beautiful that his vision was us playing and interacting with each other. And that's what you hear when you hear the record. It's not like we're an inconvenient backing track.
Right. Have you listened to it since he died?
I listened to, I Can't Give Everything.
Mm-hmm. That's a sad song.
Yeah. And I haven't really been able to listen to it.
Thank you.
beautiful songs, with blackout hearts, with flowered news, with skull designs upon my shoes. I can't give everything. I can't give everything.
I'm just in awe of the, you know, the last year of his life. I mean, to think about, did you see Lazarus?
Yeah, we've all seen it.
I felt like, you know, and I didn't know that he was sick or anything, but I wondered, you know, and I just kept thinking, this is sort of preparing us for a time in which we're going to have this music, but he's not going to be here. Then when I thought about it after he died, and when I thought about this album after he died, I mean, I feel like he was so conscious of his mortality and that these were just such beautiful final projects.
Something that I found out later was that in January, when we were recording, we would record like 11 to 4 mm-hmm. or so. And then he would go over to Henry Hayes' place and work on Lazarus.
Oh my God.
But I didn't know that. And then I think at night he was listening to what we'd recorded that day and going over it with a fine tooth comb and stuff. That's an amazing amount of output. Yeah. I mean, and that's really inspiring.
Yeah.
Sarah Larson talking with saxophonist and bandleader Donnie McCaslin about David Bowie's Black Star. We also heard drummer Mark Juliana, Jason Lindner on keyboards, and bassist Nate Wood. And you can hear some more of the music they played for us that day at NewYorkerRadio.org.
This is Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, the Science Friday team has been reporting high-quality science and technology news, making science fun for curious people by covering everything from the outer reaches of space to the rapidly changing world of AI to the tiniest microbes in our bodies. Audiences trust our show because they know we're driven by a mission to inform and serve listeners first and foremost with important news they won't get anywhere else. And our sponsors benefit from that halo effect. For more information on becoming a sponsor, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.